Hello, everyone, and welcome to another week of Survivor AU Exit Interviews. Do we have a treat for you? So, this week we lost one of the game's biggest game players, and I was devastated, and this was AK. We also lost the really interesting and super funny Ben. But this is not a traditional exit interview. For the first time, and this may be in RHAP history, I have an hour-long exit interview with a player during the season. AK and I got a chance to chat for longer than just the standard, 15 minutes. We got a chance to sit down and break down absolutely everything in his game. And it's an hour long, and there is stuff in there that I think you guys are really going to enjoy. I was a fan of AK before. Hearing his insights and the way he really thought about the game has made me an even bigger fan. He's someone who definitely gives lots of checks and balances in his Survivor play, and someone who I think we really missed out on getting for a lot longer. But while he was on there, he burnt bright. So if you would like to check that out, check it out. I know it's long, but I think it'll be worth your while. If you would like to skip straight to Ben, or if you feel that the, if you just want to kind of find Ben at a later point, his interview will start, like I said, about an hour late. And we did 20 minutes with Ben as well. So we went over there. They were both very generous with their time, and they really had a lot to say. So I hope you enjoy it. This week, we've also got Connor on the podcast to break down the episode. So that'll be coming in the next day or two as well. But for now, enjoy my chat with the breakout star of Survivor AU, AK. All right, everyone. I am wearing black. I am in complete and utter mourning, but I've got a real treat for you because we get a chance to break down a lot of the biggest moves in the game with one of the biggest players of this season, and that is AK. AK, welcome to the podcast.
Nick, I dancer, my fellow snake. How are you, mate?
I'm good, man. I'm not. AK, I'm not okay. I'm just not okay. I'm Devo, man.
And why is this? Yes.
I am so Devo. Like, you're supposed to be impartial when you're recording on these things, or, when you're a journalist or anything like that. I'm not impartial. I absolutely loved watching you play. But I will say, I am glad you're gone for one reason. And that is, I feel like my heart couldn't take being your fan. Like, you just put me through so many cardiac arrests. So much heartache, like thinking you were going to be voted out so many times, that my heart is glad you're gone, but I'm very sad.
Oh, well, I'm glad that your heart's now going to be all right. But in the words of Amy, I was completely spewing when I drew that stupidest thing about.
Dude, you played more Survivor in, how many was it, 29 days?
28 days I was out there, yeah.
You played more Survivor in 28 days than most people play in their, two-time careers. So you were great TV, just well done. I think that I speak for all the fans when I say well done. How do you feel now sitting back, looking back on your time?
Yeah, it was pretty cool experience out on the island, and then to watch it unfold in front of your very own eyes on TV, it was a really cool experience. I think the thing for me was, you're seeing people get airtime that either are trying to create these blind sides or these votes going a certain way, or you're seeing the people that the votes are going for. And I just happened to sit in that boat of both categories. I was always getting votes for, and I was always trying to orchestrate the vote off. So, I apologize to anyone who's sick of the AK show, and there's probably a few out there that are happy my torch has been snuffed.
You were that perfect Venn diagram of good TV, good player. I just think that the show was very lucky, and we're all very lucky that we got you on there. So today I want to kind of break down a few of the bigger points if you are ready to dive in.
Yeah, mate, I'm more than happy to.
Actually, before we do that, there's a lot of talk about you being a super fan, and you were someone who knew the game well. What is it about Survivor that you love, and how much of the show did you actually know, or is that an overestimation by the people out there?
Yeah, I'm not going to call myself a super fan because I don't want to upset the super fans out there. I mean, I don't really understand edgic and all that sort of stuff. But I've been watching Survivor since season 19. What actually happened was, believe it or not, I used to be a personal trainer. I had one client of mine who I couldn't connect with. I had no mutual ground with him. And every single time I trained him, he talked about Survivor, and I just roll my eyes. And one day he brought in this DVD for me, and he's like, you have to watch this guy. His name's Russell, and he's the funniest person you ever watch. So, yeah, he gave me a DVD. It was season 19 Samoa. It was the first 6 episodes. And from that DVD, I was hooked. And every time I went into a PT with him, we would just talk Survivor for 45 minutes, and I would ask him to bring in the next episode.
That is so funny. I hope you've reached out to him and thanked him for this whole experience.
I have, and I'm sure he's absolutely loved watching me play as well.
Very good, very good. So talk to me about the other episode when you were voted out. Tara said it was a blindside. Can you tell me your take on that?
I don't view it as a blindside. I mean, I go over to a tribe where I'm outnumbered. Mm-hmm. I clearly know my name's been dragged through the mud via that Tara save at Tribal Council. So, you know, when the person that's going home is seeing it coming 2 days in advance, I don't really see it as a blind side per se.
Look, I agree with you on that one. So you approach Sarah, you know you're in trouble, you've drawn the buff, you know that you're in trouble, you've gone to Luke, you've approached Sarah, et cetera. What was it about the dynamic? Did you think that any of those things were going to stick, and where was your best hope within that tribe?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I wanted to do, obviously you saw me trying to like win them over. Really, I was just trying to gauge where the dynamics of the tribe was. Henry and Ben didn't give us much at all about what was happening over at Astana, because they were obviously trying to keep their options open. So, you know, I worked it out pretty quickly that Jericho was in Luke's pocket. Odette was really not playing the game as far as I could see. Tara was treating Luke as she treated Lockie. She really wanted to, you know, not snuggle up, literally, snuggle up to that alpha male and stroke their ego. I really saw Sarah as that sort of swing vote. But, you know, after one conversation with Sarah, I knew she's a smart, smart woman, and she was a game player. So there was nothing that she said that I sort of could look at and go, wow, yep, she's locked in.
Yeah.
It was toss up shit creek, mate. I knew it. And I tried to think of so many Hail Marys. But if I threw some Hail Marys and I had ideas of what I could have done, if I did that, then that would have just proven to everyone out there that what Tara was saying was true. So I was trying to, you know, break the trend of what they'd heard and maybe for them to think, maybe it's Tara that we can't trust.
Yeah, look, okay, there's many similarities between our games, and that is definitely one of them. You're a scrambler. People call you a schemer, but then you need to scheme to get out of it, and it's a catch-22. So I think there was very few options for you there. But one of the things that came to light the next episode was that Sarah says that she wants Luke gone. Do you think that if you had pitched the idea that maybe Luke was the one that you should vote for, that she would have gone along with it?
Yeah, cool. So when you saw Sarah and I's conversation, the first thing I said is like, I haven't got my like blinkers on. I'm not tunnel visioned to getting out Tara like next. Whoever's going to work best for your game to get out, like let's move with that. And so Sarah would put it back. No. I think that Tara needs to go.
Okay.
But she goes, but you've got to promise me, you know, that Luke's next. And I like, of course, I'm going to say yes to that. So that was sort of how that played out. But we made a deal, Sarah and I, and I told her the dynamics of over at Summer Tower, told her, you know, how Jared and I were together, and that I lied to Sarah by telling her that, you know, it's Ziggy, Tessa and Peter at the top of the five, and Jared and I are fully aware we're 4 and 5.
Sure.
Jared and I have this relationship with Ben, who's comfortable to work with us, which she will see because he won't be voted out. And then that way, if she joins with us, we'd be a four of that seven. We'd have the majority in merge. We'd also have the four to go to the top four together and vote out Ziggy, Tessa, and Peter. So Sarah asked me to promise that Ziggy would be the first one of those ones gone, and I made that promise. And that was sort of my best play to Sarah, to make her, to tell her, you know, she's guaranteed final four. There'll be two Summertower and two a Sunga.
Yeah, well, pretty good pitch. I like that's a pretty good pitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the other key components of your game, and you know, whether that you like it or not, you know, you will forever be lumped in with Tara as this kind of rivalry. She's been drawing a lot of heat online, which is never good. Yeah. If you're one of the people out there doing that, please stop doing that. But what is it about her that is making so many people frustrated, not only as viewers, but like that made you so frustrated out there?
Yeah, I mean, I know I've been called like cocky and arrogant out there, but I mean, the clips you see of me smiling at tribal council and stuff, they're from things that people have answered Jonathan that have been hilarious and I'm laughing or whatnot. So when you see people's reactions at tribal council, don't read into that. But in saying that, the reason I think that Tara's copping so much hate is because there's such a huge difference between Tara when things are going her way and Tara when they're not. Yeah. If you can try and decrease that margin between cocky and arrogant and whatnot, and I'm not saying she is, I'm just saying that's how it's coming across. You can try and shorten that margin from being on top and being on the bottom, then you're going to cop less heat.
Sure.
So in fairness, though, what I will say, and this is to all the game players that are out there, I mean, they're putting themselves out there to be criticized by saying they're going to be playing big and hard. But imagine 24 contestants going out there going, oh, I just want to play a good game.
Yeah.
I just want to go along with the flow. Like, come on, no one's watching. So, like credit to the players that are putting themselves out there to be crucified for it.
I just want to go back to Tara quickly. You know, how much of the show did she know? Because she seems to hate the fact that you have to strategize. But then, like you said, when it starts to go her way, she's really like a little giddy schoolgirl that she gets to do it. So how much did she know the fundamentals of the game? And did she know that it was a game about deception?
Yeah, it's hard. She obviously understood that, you know, once that Tarzan had been voted out, that, you know, that was the time to sort of recruit Tessa or a fifth to change the dynamics of that alliance of eight. But it's just the way that you go about it, like telling Tessa that she's desperate 10-20 minutes before the vote probably isn't going to get Tessa on board after you've just come back from the previous tribal council and had a go at Peter and myself and, you know, all those sort of things.
So if she's doing it, why does she hate you so much?
I don't know. I feel like maybe for the fact that she went after me, so she had in her mind that I was the one going home. I mean, I spent probably from the second Adam was gone home, I spent so much time working on Tessa.
Yeah.
And I say that politely, working on her. Like, I built such a strong relationship with Tessa, and that Tessa was always going to move forward with me. The tricky one was Peter, but I will say this in defense to Peter, is that they made it look like he was the switch vote, and it was that one subtle conversation with Jared. Like, Peter was on board with us for ages. I personally feel like the worst move up until this point of the game was Tara detaching herself from Peter to Lockie because she could see how tight Lockie and Amy were.
Right, right, right.
Because what you didn't see was how tight Peter and Tara were.
Okay.
You know, Tara couldn't handle how close Lockie and Amy were. That's the way I view it. I might be wrong, and sorry, Tara, if it is. But
she's
Tara
not
spent
listening.
So much time. So Tara spent a lot of time trying to get into Lockie's pocket, to say, and that made Peter feel vulnerable. Sure. And Jared and I, we pounced on that. There were so many conversations with Peter, not just that one that Jared had, but that's how we came up with that five, and that boat was never going any other way.
Sure.
We had that locked in days ahead.
So you bring up Lockie. So your relationship with Lockie, I loved watching it because I identified as the AK in the situation, and from my previous experience on Survivor, you know, there are people that would fit into that Lockie role. Is that kind of that bigger buff guy, like to me, like the Sam, the person who's never had people not adore him, And, you know, it was just really funny to see him struggle with that. Can you describe that relationship with Lockie when you're not gelling with him and he just doesn't understand why?
Yeah. I mean, the funniest thing about Lockie is that in my day-to-day life, Lockie would be the person, probably one of the only people in the Summertower tribe that, you know, I would bump into.
Yeah.
That kind of character. So he should have been a real easy person to get along with for me out there. But, I mean, I didn't want control and power, but I feel like what he identified with me once we got Amy out was, I mean, out of Jared, Peter and myself, I was, in his eyes, clearly the alpha male. And, and who else would be running the show but the alpha male?
Sure.
So Lockie and I were tight up until that Amy vote. But yeah, I mean, when Tara said to go for me and he was happy to do it, I think that's where it all started. I got his group before he got mine, and
yeah,
that's how it laid. But you know, Lockie and I actually we got along really well out in the island. We had a crack up, and you know, we shared a mutual love of sport and competition and things like that. But I just frustrated the hell out of him game wise because. Yeah. You know, I'd be throwing out, this is when we were in an alliance, I'd be throwing out all these scenarios and different like numbers and whatnot, and he just couldn't comprehend or understand them and go, whoa, dude, like we need to take a step back. What are you saying? I was like, oh, it's not that difficult. So like, that's where I can completely tell that, you know, the five that we, I call it the Samatau five, that five is definitely the group I wanted to move forward with.
That was a great alliance, by the way. I love that. The thing about Lockie,
that's a cool dynamic.
Yeah, the thing about Lockie is he seems to always be having these like crises of his own masculinity, and it's just so funny to watch that he just seems just so perplexed that people don't like him or people that don't want to won't follow him or he's not good at things. And I just think that's absolutely fascinating, Lockie. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, like there's a reason Lockie was cast, and it's because he's not only is he like 6'6" and a man mountain who dominates everything he does in life, he also knows it.
Yeah.
And so, like you saw the plate challenge that Ziggy and I were standing up holding that plate, and then you had Henry and Mark on the other side.
Yeah.
And I think Lockie dropped out pretty early, probably because the people alongside him weren't his height or whatnot, but. He come back and I think you saw him say like, oh, I don't suck at anything.
Yes. Like, oh, I noticed that.
That's brilliant TV. Like that's the ultimate alpha male.
Yes.
Like, come on.
Yes. that made me laugh and yell in anger. I want to just go to someone else on some day. So you mentioned Pete. So when you swapped over with Pete, I loved seeing a bit more of Pete in that episode. Did you ever fear that he was going to throw you under the bus? Because traditional rules state that, you know, like what happened with Michelle and Ben when two people switch over, you know, did you ever fear that that was happening? And why do you think it is that he stuck with you?
Yeah, so Peter, what you haven't seen, he's a strategic thinker and he's playing a great social game. And I said to Peter very early, as soon as we go over to Asanga, and I actually think they aired this too from memory, is I said, we need to not just get through one vote, we need to get through the merge. And I tried to play to Peter that we're not going to be able to do that unless we're together.
Yeah.
So by saying that, I sort of felt like, you know, Peter was never going to turn the tables on me, but I also said to him that when people come at you and say like, are you on board with AK, you have to say yes.
Yes, okay.
That doesn't upset me. And there were so many times where, you know, in our group of five alliance, we were telling each other, especially when Henry and Ben came over, like, you've got to throw our names out there, we've got to seem like we're ready to defeat each other, but just know that we're going to stay tight, because you can't be paranoid all the time when your alliance members are having conversations with others. So, because you don't want them to be paranoid when you're having those conversations, because that's when chaos happens.
I think that's such a fantastic, I love that. And I don't think I've ever heard people talk about it in that way, AK. Like, I've listened to a lot of Survivor stuff, but I think that shows a lot of confidence, not only in your game style, but also in the bond between the alliance that you had there. And I think it was much stronger than we're being led to believe if people are willing to say that. And I think that's a real testament to all five of you.
Definitely. And like, for example, just little tiny things. Jared would sleep down one end of the shelter and I'd sleep down the other end. And so Jared was like between Tara and Lockie or next to them. He was hearing everything they were saying and he was involved in conversations about, you know, he would like start these conversations about, you know, AK is getting too dangerous in this game. You know, it might be time to move, just to hear where they were on that. And then I'd be like, you know, I, for the predominant most part, I was on the end because I didn't help with the shelter. So they sort of like, you can just be on the end. But I had a different amount of people that were like sleep next to me, but I was nowhere near Jared. And he was like, him and Tess were my tightest too. And like, you just had to have that trust that they were going to have conversations. Because you can't move forward in the game and without people. And so you need to have that trust and make them feel like you trust them when they're not with you.
Interesting.
Sorry, that was really long-winded.
But I
didn't feel like Peter was ever going to flip on me.
Right, and, that was such a great answer.
That was also one of my selling points to Sarah, is what I said to her was, look, I'm telling you that I'm in this alliance of five. I am not going to write Peter's name down. Now, people might think that is a stupid play because it should be anyone but yourself. But if Peter goes, I'm next. I have no one. So what I need to prove to Sarah is that I'm a loyal person to my alliances. So even though that Peter and I are on the outside, I'm not writing Peter's name down because I wanted to prove to her, if she moves forward with me, if someone goes, are you willing to write Sarah? I'm not.
Yeah, that's great. No, I think that's another, it's just, it's so different to what we usually see when the two people go over in a swap. So I'm all about that. Let's just talk about Ziggy for a second. So talk us through her being selected for the Super Idol. So why was it Ziggy and why was it not Tessa as she was throwing her name out there?
Yeah, cool. So Jared, Ziggy and I, we started a three pretty early on. And we were all really committed to that. The issue with that was, you know, my name was thrown out there so heavily that, you know, it was really hard for them to commit to me until the numbers fell our way, which I completely understand, because you're not going to put your neck on the line for someone you've known for 6 days.
Yep.
So, yeah, we were actually really tight and we all got along really well. So for Jared and I, the best decision was Ziggy because she was in our three.
Sure.
Tessa was tighter with Peter Tessa was probably tightest with Peter and myself. So if Tessa went, it wasn't an issue for me, but then that would cause a bit of paranoia for Jared as to why I was
okay
happy
with
to send Tessa over Ziggy.
Sure.
So Ziggy just was the easiest choice for our alliance.
Sure.
Man, if I'd known what that... If they had announced what the reward was going to be, I would have said to my alliance, look, at the moment, I'm out of the five of us, I'm the kicking boy. You know whoever's going to go get this is going to get a target on their back. Why not send me? Because I've already got this massive target and I've already proven to you guys that I'm willing to play an idol for someone else at the tribal council.
Yeah.
That would have been my pitch because I would have wanted it in my hands. But I thought it was, I didn't really like the super reward.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because, you know, you want to throw your name out there, but I thought that was an interesting way to do the way they did it. It was interesting to see people kind of scrambling to get their name in the conversation. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I just saw people, like, just quickly, like, hating on, like, Lockie or hating on myself or hating on someone that was like, I want this ultimate reward. Of course we want this reward. Yeah. We're not out there for someone else to win half a mil. Like, calm down.
Before the tribe swap, when we had Henry and Ben at the camp still, what would have happened if Summertown had lost in that situation? And did Henry fit into your plans? What were you going to try and do?
Best question ever. I wanted this to play out so badly. And so let me go through it. So Ben and Henry come over. Jared and I adopt Ben. We say that the same thing that I said to Sarah, there's a five of us, that Jared and I are four and five and we're aware of that. You come into that, that's a 3-3 in our six moving into the merge. Then Jared and I told, by the way, Jared and I told our alliance, other alliance, that we were doing that. And we told them that they should do the same thing to Ben, say that it's Tessa, Ziggy and Peter, and Jared and AK are four and five.
Yeah,
if he joins them, that gives them four, out of the six, and that guarantees him top four.
That's great.
Way he's not only coming over, he's now got two options, and he's a pivotal option that he can choose.
Sure.
And he thinks that he's like got the upper hand of that alliance.
So who was the target then?
So that was our thing. Sorry to make this long-winded.
No.
So we made Ben believe that we were gunning for Henry. We told him we're gunning for Henry. That way, if he relayed that to Henry, that Henry would play an idol. If Ben had an idol and he was really wanting to stay and work with Henry because they came over together, he would waste the idol on Henry. We told Henry that, you know, the group is splitting the votes, and this is with Lockie in our conversation. We're splitting the votes between Henry and Ben, and then when it gets to a tied vote, we'd vote out Henry. That way, Lockie would tell Henry that we're voting to him too. So everyone's thinking that we're going Henry, but the Alliance of Five was going to vote for Lockie.
Oh, that would have been so brilliant to watch play out.
Yeah. So that's how it was. And then what we would have done with Ben was we would say, look, we didn't know if we could have trust you or not, but we needed to see from your vote if you would vote the way we asked you to. You clearly voted with us. You were like, you know, you're 100% on board with us. Or if he wasn't voting with us, then we'd be like, well, you lied to us.
Sure. I love that plan so much. That's great.
It would have, like, how fun would have that tribal council be?
Yeah.
But it never happened.
Yeah.
So best case scenario there, Henry flushes his idol, Lockie goes home. The Alliance Summertale 5 has a 5-2 numbers advantage with Ben involved. If he voted with us, a 6-1 numbers advantage.
Yeah. Would have been great. It would have been great.
Yeah.
You should have thrown the challenge.
Tell me about it.
All right. Let's go back to the beginning. So you came out strong. This was like a big story of yours. You came out strong. And look, I can sympathize about that. Did you genuinely have regrets about that time? Or was that something that, you know, when you were showing that emotion on the beach that day and you were talking to Adam, it was at night. Was that also part of the playing?
Yeah. So look, I mean, I went out there to play, but what happened was I had this conversation with Adam very early on. I was standing next to Adam on the barge. And as you would know, like when you're on the barge for that filming, you're not just on there for 10 minutes before Jonathan comes on, you're on there for hours on end. So I identified Adam as someone who was there to play the game because he was looking for idols. So when we got onto the island, I had a conversation with him before anyone, and I was like, we're doing this, aren't we? Like, I've got a feel for you. We're 100% doing this. And he obviously identified me as a game player as well. And so we had this agreement that we would talk to as many people as we could today, that me and him wouldn't talk at all. And then the next day we would get together and we'd talk about who we get good feelings from,
yeah,
who's obviously not a game player and we can drag along. And that way, hopefully, we could come together with a mutual agreement of who we liked for an alliance.
Sure.
Excuse me 2 seconds. Excuse me. Sorry, mate.
All these survivors just getting you all, you know,
yeah,
choked up.
But what actually happened was Adam planted himself where we were building the shelter. And every time someone would be like, oh, I'm going to go grab palm fronds or I'm going to go grab weeds, I'd be like, I'll go with you. And then as I was going off, Adam would tell these people, AK's come at me so aggressively. He wants to talk strategy. He doesn't even know a thing about me. Look at him. He's gone off with other, and other people are like, oh my God, he'd do the same thing with me. He'd do the same thing
with
me.
That's a good move on Adam's behalf.
Oh my goodness. It's the best move. It was like full credit to him. Like, that's genius. Nobody wants to be the first boot. And in the first day, he's made a mutual agreement with everyone without even them realizing that this guy is the obvious first boot.
Yeah, that's so good. That's good.
It was brilliant play, like asshole, but brilliant. but the thing is like they showed me like going up to Tarzan and be like, what do you want to be called? Mark or Tarzan? Good, Mark, that's my uncle's name, which it is, by the way. Going to Tara, you know, oh, you have kids? What's your kid's name? Nash? Oh, that's what I want to call my second boy, which is, by the way, it's not a lie.
But like, not anymore.
I was having these conversations for 10, 15 minutes with these people before those sentences were brought up.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like I was talking game or anything. I was just getting to know them.
Yeah,
and then
that, yeah.
at the end of every conversation, I wanted to try and relate, or during the conversation, if it was genuine, I wanted to try and relate. It's funny, when I said that thing about Nash, the name Nash wanting to be my second boy, it was so true. But as I was saying it to her, in my head, I'm like, oh my God, this is the most dumbest thing you could possibly do. She's not going to believe you for a second. But yeah, I was just so switched on in game mode. And full credit to Adam, but I guess I get the last laugh on that bout.
Well, the thing that didn't seem all, you know, you talk about how things not being all as they seem. One of the things I wanted to clear up with you, because the bit where Tara was vomiting, I think it was in the first or second episode, and says that she's vomiting and that you go over and you talk game. I don't know. I call bullshit on that because, and I want you to clear this up. There never was any audio of you actually saying that, and they never. And if they did, I believe they would have shown it. Can you clear up what actually happened there?
Yeah, so with the Tara thing, I mean, it was raining that night. She was throwing up. No one else went over to check up on her. And, you know, I feel like it was misrepresented, because part of me did go over to her to make sure I was the only one that checked up on her, I guess to, you know, consolidate for her that, you know, I would have her back and care for her. But the conversation that actually happened that night, I went over to Tara and said, Tara, are you someone that likes to have someone with you while you're throwing up, or do you like to be left alone? Because I know I like to be left alone, and my partner Beck likes to have someone with her. So Tara pretty much said, like, I can't believe this is happening to me on like this first or second night, and this is not what she had planned for, but yeah, she prefers to be left alone. So then you see me walking off. So
that's pretty much annoying.
It's frustrating for me, because out of the first 3 days, it's probably my most genuine moment, and it was like twisted to be my most awful moment.
Yeah.
But you know, this is the best thing, and I repeat this to like our fellow contestants all the time: the people that really know us know who we are. And I got so many messages that night going, we know you didn't like do that to her. We know you would have made sure she was okay.
Yeah.
So that's all that matters to me.
I think that the hard part there is that you know, you sign up for the show kind of like twisting, you know, understand that it's twisted. But in her confessional, she says that you came up to speak game. And have you spoken to her about that since the game? And has she admitted that that was not what happened?
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, see, that's annoying. That's annoying to me.
Well, we haven't gone into detail exactly how it went about of her saying that. But what I will say is that, you know, they would have asked her about how she went throwing up. And then she probably would have got asked, you know, how did you feel that out of all people, AK was the one that came and checked up on you? And she would have said something, and they might have said something to her like, do you think he was checking on you because he cares? Or do you think he was checking on you to make, like, be in an alliance with him or something like that?
Yeah.
And then they could have twisted it and gone, okay, we'll say it like that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's just an unfortunate situation, and I've been landed in it because yeah. I've obviously got the lazy villain edit. Yeah. So do you know what? I own and I'm proud of everything that I didn't say out on that island, and that's one thing that I won't say ever happened, because it definitely didn't.
Great. So let's move away from Tara's vomiting and can you explain, like, you know, briefly explain, because I feel like it's a big story, but the, you know, you found the real idol, and I want to say congratulations. What a feeling. Like, that is,
thank you.
That's such a Survivor milestone that you can tick off, that you found an idol, played an idol. How much self-control did it take to not play it on you? Because you seem pretty confident that it wasn't going to be you.
Yeah, so once I actually found it, I told Jared straight away. I told Jared that I had this idol, and how can we best make this work for me and for us, really, because, you know, as much as he was sort of in good with people, he knew he was on the outs as well. So at that point in time, I was definitely the person we voted out. And the reason that I brought Jared into it is because I could have played that night as a massive shock to everyone, and save myself for a night, and then everyone would have been on board with getting me out the following night, the following tribal council. It, as I mentioned earlier, when I was talking about how I was talking with Peter about how we get through the Asanga stage, I wasn't there just to get through one more tribal council. I was there to put myself in the best position to go deeper in the game.
Yeah.
So we both felt like it was a good way to get in with the Lockie Alliance. So what actually happened is we planned for Jared to be having that conversation with a huge group of that alliance, and for Jared to call me in and get me to tell them that all that I had the idol. So it worked perfectly. He called me in. I went and told him, hey guys, look, I know I've started out this game bad. I want to show you that I am someone that you can trust, and I will vote the way you ask me to. I'm going to tell you right now, I've got an idol, and I pulled out and showed them. I said, I'm going to play it tonight because it's stupid for me to hold on to it, because, you know, if I do get through the vote, I'm just going to get the idol flushed, and then I'm going to go in the third tribal council. So I'm going to play it tonight. 100% this idol is being played tonight. So who do you want me to vote for? And they said, well, who do you want out of this game? And I said, I want Adam out of this game. I feel like he's causing the most paranoia out of anyone. And I knew that him and Tara had that little tiff because everything, you know, gets spread around camp like wildfire. So Tara was there at the time and she was like, yes, definitely. And then so they were concerned he might have an idol as well. So that's where a couple of votes went to sure. Kate. But the thing about this that people don't understand is that Ziggy was in on this conversation, and we told Ziggy at the time, because Adam felt like he had Ziggy, that she should vote with Adam that night, so that the following tribal council, and I brought this up, the following tribal council, that we would know exactly where Tarzan, Kate and Tessa were putting their votes, and if they had an idol and stuff, because I'd feel like Ziggy was in with them.
Right.
And what that did by me doing that and saying that, that straight away created us versus them.
Mm.
Because then we had an insider yep. on them.
Okay.
So Ziggy knew I had the idol, so I told her that she should probably let like Adam know, and if they should like go for someone else. And she opened up that it was going to be Annalise. So that's where you see me having the conversation with Annalise going, you know, I think they're gunning for you. Adam told me, right, blah, 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 right. blah. So that she would believe me.
Very
so anyway,
very cool.
What happened is the reason I played the idol for Jared is that I left out that conversation because I didn't want to come across like I kept pushing the point or having to be involved and like I was okay with that. I saw that whole alliance, other than myself, Jared and Ziggy, all having another conversation. And my worry was that they were going to put votes on Jared because he's now put them in this shit position that he's pulled AK into their alliance and they didn't want AK in their alliance.
Yeah, right. So you played on him to kind of, yeah, okay. That makes much more sense.
Knowing full well they weren't going to vote for me, that I had promised them I would play the idol that night and that's how I would gain trust, that I knew that Ziggy had referred to Adam that I had the idol so that votes were going off me. So I knew I was safe that night.
Sure.
And so that way, if they were having that conversation of getting rid of Jared, then, you know, I would have saved Jared.
Well, and you said you were going to play it. You just didn't say who you were going to play it on. So I didn't know.
That's exactly right. And this is the thing, is that if they like brought up that conversation with me, like my alliance, I was never going to say, well, I saw you having a conversation without me and Jared. I was just going to say I caught wind for overhearing Adam about bringing up
sure.
Jared's
oh,
name.
Cool. Yeah, checks and balances, yeah. checks and balances.
That's right. And that also proves alliance, like I'm willing to play and save them and stay strong as a number.
Mm. How does the chicken idol yeah. fit into all this?
Yeah, cool. So that was before all this. So the chicken idol was just an idea, just something that I threw out there. There was a lot of talk early on in camp that on the barge on day one, there were chicken coops, but no chickens in them. So when I found out that I was, well, realized I was on the complete outer, thanks to Adam's genius move, I needed to know who the contingency plan was. Who's the other person that's on the out? So I came up with this dilemma, and what you saw me telling Jared was actually, was actually me telling Jared what I was doing. It sure. wasn't me trying to fool Jared. It was me telling him what I was doing because okay. he was involved in everything.
Okay.
So I had told Lockie and I had told Adam because at the time, Adam still had me believing that, you know, it was me and him, and Lockie was clear leader of that alliance. I needed to see if they were going to spread this stuff. And if they did, and a slight bit of them believed it, and I knew Adam might, because he's a big fan of the game, who wouldn't believe a dilemma on the barge, who the alternate person was going to be if I did have it. So that alternative person was Annalise.
Okay.
Which was perfect for my game, because she was in beat with Lockie, and I could tell her that. And then, you know, that starts, no one wants it to be them first. And I didn't tell Annalise that I didn't have the chicken idol. I just told her that, you know, I've got this idol and, you know, your name's now come up.
Right.
So you actually see her at tribal council going, you know, with idols in play, there's contingency plans, and yep. you know, apparently I'm expandable. So you know, that paranoia you got to Annalise along with that conversation I had with her on the beach in the water. So it sort of showed Annalise also that everything I was telling her was true.
Sure.
But the best part about it is that I made this fake looking chicken idol.
We saw it.
Once I had this real idol in my pocket, and what I wanted it to do. This is, keep in mind, before anyone was, like, willing to work with me, I was like, I'm going to discredit the fact that I have the real idol by creating a deliberately looking fake idol so that when I bring it out and act all cocky about it, people are like, oh, my God, this guy's an absolute dickhead. He needs to go home. And I love it, the confessional of Amy going, he's a goose! Like, all along, like, I'm sitting on this idol.
I think that's, and I'd have to get the, you know, the fact checkers out there. And I think we talked about this at the time, but I think that might be the first example of someone having the real idol and then having a fake idol, other than maybe in Worlds Apart, then when I think Mike took Joe's as a proof to check if it was, get it verified. Other than that, I think that you're the first person to have made a fake one with a real one in your pocket. So well done.
Yeah. And my favorite play of the whole thing was I went over there and I found it. I knew, well, obviously Adam's going to come back here because he doesn't have it in his pocket. So I left that that pink string that was wrapped around it. I left it where the idol was.
Loved it.
And I'm just lucky enough that he went over there with people. And you saw that, how much paranoia that created. So yep. Lockie holding that string and flinging it around.
Yeah.
And what they didn't show is when they came walking back, we're all sitting on the beach. And Lockie's got this pink string wrapped around his, like, finger, and he's flinging it around. And they're going to the group, oh, no, we didn't find it. And everyone's going, well, what's that pink string then? it was just laying around. And, like, Jared just looked over to me. He knew I had it. We were always on the same page, like, on the same wavelength.
That's so funny.
It was such a fun afternoon. And it was also the afternoon of my fake birthday, which they didn't show.
Yes. So
that was brilliant. That was brilliant.
Right. Okay. Well, give us the 10-second version of your fake birthday.
Before I went out there, I told production I'm going to have a fake birthday on day 5. In those 5 days, I'm going to build up so much trust and love with everyone. They're going to realize how sad I am that I'm away from my family, that I'm going to need some alone time. And I'm going to find the hidden immunity idol without a clue on day 5. And then the irony of that is in the first 5 days, I built no trust. No one liked me. I went out and I didn't need alone time. I just went and had it because no one, in you know, obvious sight of everyone. But hey, I stuck true to my word and I found that idol without a clue
without
on day
clue.
5. So that's pretty cool.
That is a very cool story.
Nick, I'm so devastated that I didn't get that TV moment that, you know, of me finding it.
Yes. Yes. So,
like quoting Russell Hands, like, keep hope alive.
Yeah.
Like, it was just so good. It was so good.
Yeah, I understand. But, you know, the moment where you pulled it out that night, that was pretty epic. So I want to talk about another idol. Yeah. There was the Tarzan found his idol. You copped a lot of heat online that Tarzan, that you kind of spilled the beans. Why did you feel that Tarzan had to go? Can you clear your name about what happened with that idol?
Yeah, sure. So I was always wanting to work with Tessa, and the night before Kate went, I sat with Tarzan on the beach for probably 4 hours, just me and him. And I was having a conversation and I wanted to see where he was with the game, because that would have been a pretty good time to try and get Jared over. You know, there's Tarzan, Tessa, Kate, myself, Jared, that's 5. We had Ziggy, that'd be 6. And the whole time, Tarzan just kept talking about how he wants Kate out of this game. And I don't know if he was doing it to save his own butt for the next tribal, but he knew he wasn't going home. And I just thought, like, he's throwing his own alliance up, you know, out there, and that he wants Kate gone. So I'm like, all right, well, this guy's, like, already willing to flip on his own alliance. And Tarzan, just certain things he did and said, I sort of felt like, you know, he didn't pick up on the fact that, you know, he was being blatantly obvious with people. While he thought he was deceiving them. And that's nothing against Tarzan. I feel like that's just, like, part of the game. There's things at tribal council where at the Kate vote, you know, we had Tessa feeling like it was her. And he would say things like, well, you know, Tessa, miracles happen every day.
Yeah.
And I just felt like it was a very, like, you know, Keith, how he's like, stick to the plan.
Well, we know
and
Keith,
it just ruins the whole tribe. It just ruins the whole tribal. But it's just so much things like that. It's just someone I couldn't work with moving forward because it's so unpredictable and someone I couldn't work with.
Definitely.
So they showed that night that Tarzan went, Lockie going, we're lumping all the votes on Tessa. Well, the thing with that was, is that the reason they were doing that is because they couldn't have Tarzan coming back to tribal council pissed off that he got votes split with him because he was so like erratic around camp, which he didn't see.
Right.
But Lockie was genuinely worried about that. And I know Lockie, and they were never putting the full amount of votes on someone. So who was the other person on the bottom? Who's the other name? It's AK.
Yep.
So votes, I'm not going to take it personally. So votes are then going to be split between Tessa and AK. And I'm not cool with that. Then I'm talking to Tessa, trying to see like if I can like work with her, Tarzan, or whatnot. And Tarzan comes and gives Tessa the idol.
So I can't believe he did it in front of you.
In front of me. But do you know what? It was that conversation I had on the beach that made him feel like he could trust me.
Yeah.
Like, I spent a lot of time with him and, like, you know, we talked heart to heart and I hold some of those conversations dear to me. But game-wise, he felt like he could trust me saying that,
yeah,
like giving it to Tessa. So so what happened is he gave her the idol and I had a decision to make. The first thing I thought was I could not say a thing and then they stay with the votes. But if they do split and then me, Tessa and Tarzan vote Lockie or even Tessa and Tarzan vote Lockie, I'm still going to get the majority vote and I'm going to be voted out of this game. The second thing that went through my head was, well, shit, if they're not willing to write Tarzan's name down, then and they find out Tessa's got an idol, all votes are going to me and I'm going home.
Mm.
So I needed to go to Lockie and I needed to tell him Tarzan's just given Tessa an idol. Not only has he given her the idol, but Tarzan's gone, we need to get Lockie. This idol deserves a big ticket item.
Yeah. Right.
So I had to tell Lockie that because with Lockie, as soon as someone says his name, Lockie wants them gone.
Yeah, we saw
Lockie's
that.
he's not okay to just sit back on it. He wants the next one gone. So what had happened is that they're like, all right, we're voting out Tarzan. The thing is, I actually said this to Lockie in front of Tarzan really loudly so everyone could hear. Because as I mentioned, Tarzan isn't someone who can play it good. And Tarzan admitted to Lockie, yes, that's exactly what I did.
Mm.
And so Lockie was like, well, you just wrote your name. Like, you just done it. You just, you know, you wrote your own ticket. So Tarzan knew he was going home that night. But what you didn't see is I went to Tessa and I said, I know you are super intelligent. And keep in mind, I've been keeping a relationship with Tessa. I know that you're going to write Tarzan's name down tonight because if we split it, that way you can hold the idol. And then you can use it the next time. But I'm changing my vote tonight from Tarzan to Tessa because that's going to force you to play the idol. And that way it won't be me if we can't get the numbers together. Does that make sense?
It does.
Does that make sense? Because if Tessa holds on to the idol and votes Tarzan, and we split the vote, Tarzan gets the most votes and Tessa holds on to it. If I can't conjure the numbers to flip on Amy at the next vote,
yes.
Tessa plays the idol, I go home.
Again, checks and balances, so AK. I'm learning about you. There's checks and balances all the time.
So I tell Tessa, you need to play your idol tonight because I'm writing your name down. And you'll see in my voting confessional, I say, I hope you play your idol tonight because I want to work with you down the track.
Yeah, that's
great. So she plays the idol. As you saw it, Tessa ended up getting 5 votes because Tarzan voted for Tessa. And this is another reason I couldn't work with Tarzan. Tarzan didn't even think of the fact that if Tessa voted for him, she could have held the idol.
Yes.
So Tarzan votes for Tessa as a vote of confidence. He announced it at tribal council. And I was like, well, I don't even really need to vote for Tessa now. But anyway, so Tessa ended up voting for Lockie as a bit of a stuff you.
Yeah. I'm so glad you explained that because that was a bit of a cluster F when we watched that, just knowing exactly what went happened and what went where.
Yeah, see, honestly, I was going home if I didn't it wasn't best for my game if I didn't rat out Tarzan. And yeah. I know that doesn't sit well with the casuals, because Tarzan's such a great character and he's like a genuine person and everything else. But it's Survivor, and that was best for my game.
On the Amy Blind side, just moving forward from that, that was the next vote.
Yep.
You know, do you feel like, I know you said you have no regrets, and I don't think you should, but is one of them maybe that instead of Amy, you should have targeted Tara that night?
Yeah, so, like, don't get me wrong, like, Tara and Amy were thrown out, like, who do we get? And this was the thing about why we went for Amy, is that the first one was, that's who Peter was most confident about going after.
Sure, and you need Peter's
vote. As much as I said that Peter was always with us, Peter also knew that he was coming over to us. So we needed him to feel like he has a say.
Fair enough.
In this relationship. That's the first one. The second one was, Amy's the type of chick who would be like, oh, if she, say Tara went home, Amy would hang around and be like, yeah, no worries. Like, who cares? It's a game. It's sweet as. And Peter could be like swooned into coming back to her because she's been so sweet and everything else. We knew that Tara would implode and explode. We knew it. Like, she plays emotionally. And it's credit to Tessa that she's the one that put this idea, like, we need to keep Tara because, you know, she's an emotional player. You know that our alliance of five, we're all, like, rational. And that's not attractive to us. We're not going to want to play with that or move to that. So that was the decision behind keeping Amy. Do I regret it? No, because if we vote out Amy the next night and she goes over to Asanga, like, Amy would have done the same thing Tara did, is drag my name through the mud. She might not have done it in the same manner, but she would have been like, oh, yeah, that AK, oh, shit, he's a game player. But, like, you know, like, sorry, Amy, for my bad impersonation. But
no, I like, but, you know, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, the same thing happened either way. I really feel like it was the twist that, you know, was the beginning of the end for me.
Well, I want to talk about that. So you finally get Tara out. We don't even need to talk about how frustrating that would have been that she didn't go home.
Yeah.
And I was someone who was saved by twists like this, so I understand that they can have both positives and negatives, etc. But to me, I just want to ask you a quick question about this. So when you're told you were voting someone else out and Annalise is you know, eventually voted out, did you think that they were both going home? Was there any part of you that thought that this was going to be another twist? Because we know Australian Survivor loves the non-elimination episodes and they're just part of it. What was the thought process in your mind? And I know you have to play it as if she is going home, but what did you think?
So my first thought, and this is without a word of a lie, and I know Tessa thought this as well because she was whispering to me, they're not going home, was they're getting saved. But this was the dilemma. If we had been told that, I mean, I would have put myself up to go over with Tara. That way I could contradict everything that she said.
Right.
So it'd be her word against my word. If we knew that's what was happening. But we didn't know that it's going to be 26 episodes. We don't know what they've done, like, production-wise.
Yeah.
There could be an 18-episode season and we could be having our first ever double elimination.
Sure.
So I went to myself, if I nominate myself and it is an elimination, I'm going to go down as the dumbest Australian Survivor player of all time.
No, you have to play as if it's...
You have to vote someone out.
Yeah.
And what actually happened was Jonathan... I'm sitting next to Ziggy on my right and Tessa on my left. And Jonathan calls up Annalise to grab the urn and take it back with her to write her first vote. As she's walking up to Jonathan to grab it, Ziggy looks at me with her bulging eyes. She darts her eyes at Annalise. She darts them back at me. I just do a slight nod and we know we're voting for Annalise. Ziggy yells it out so the others hear it and I vote next. I actually said, I'm voting for Annalise and the last two people should vote for Lockie in case she has an idol. So that's what I yelled out and you can see that. So then they didn't actually show that Peter and Jared's votes were actually for Lockie and not Annalise.
That's emergent gameplay. Like, the show throws something at you and you guys reacted in the situation and I absolutely loved that. That's just so great. I loved it.
We had such a strong alliance of five that were willing to play the game. And I feel like, I'm sorry to production, but I feel like the five of us were almost punished for playing too well in that twist.
I can understand that. I can understand. It sounds cocky to say, but I don't think it is. I think I understand
I'm not taking like all this credit. It takes five of us to make these moves happen, and every single person had their input and their say and really smart strategic ideas. I just feel like there's a couple of them, like Jared and Peter, huge strategic players, but they're playing such a subtle game. I don't think that it translates onto TV. Where myself, you know, I'm loud and have a few one-liners and stuff. I'm obviously, you know, early boo, so I'm getting a bit of airtime about it. But no, I just want to say that Summer Tower Five, every one of us, we made the decisions together, and it was an even contribution.
Well, you say you were confessional. You were pure gold in the confessionals. Your confessional count, I don't know if you saw it or whatever, but it was through the roof. You got the DQ award, which is the Des Quilty for the for your Velcro wallet comment. But something we figured out. We apologize to you. Shannon Gates and I apologize because, do you know what? We're the reason you got voted out. Do you want to know why?
Please let me know. Intrigued.
The DQ award is cursed.
Oh no.
Jackie.
What's this about? Yeah, okay.
Jackie won, gone. Kent won, gone. AK won.
They won the Des Quilty award and they go next.
AK won, gone. You won week one, week two, week three. After you always go. Now we voted. We gave it to Luke this week, so don't say anything. But we see what happens there. But I feel like now that Shannon Gates and I we've cursed the season.
So based off this statistic, Luke's next to go.
Exactly. And I apologize, everyone, for what we've done to the season. Direct all angry tweets to Shannon Gates and myself. We will take them on the chin.
No, direct them to Des Quilty because he's new to social media. Let's just flood his inbox.
There's one other curse that's hit you, and someone on Twitter has pointed this out to me, and that is the 10th boot curse. Do you know who got booted out 10th boot last year?
It's either one of two of Craig or Phoebe, because I know Peter decided to leave off his own bat, so... Who is it? Is it Craig or is it Phoebe?
It's Phoebe. Phoebe.
There you go.
Strategic confessional gold. You find idols.
Phoebe.
You and Phoebe are in good company there. So whoever goes out to play Survivor next year and Australian Survivor, the 10th boot is going to be someone that we all really remember.
Yeah, let's hope that they don't get done over.
Yeah. AK, we've spoken for so long tonight, but there's one more thing we have to do. I'm going to give you some rapid-fire questions. I've been doing them this season and I've been...
Oh, I love rapid-fire.
Okay, good. Have you been enjoying the podcast?
I have. I find it hilarious that some people with the rapid-fire question will give you a five-minute answer. Not looking at anyone, Kent. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, some of them have not been that rapid, but we'll give it a go. Okay, you ready?
Yeah, I'll be rapid. Let's go.
Okay, ready. Number one, other than Lockie, who got the most hangry?
Tara.
As a DJ, if you could make Tara listen to one song every day for the rest of her life, what would it be?
Nickelback. Nickelback's greatest hit on repeat.
What are the main differences from the camps at Asunga and Summertown? I mean the physical spaces.
The physical spaces? Asunga is foresty. It has coconuts everywhere and papaya trees. Summertown is swampy and has zero coconut.
Yeah, and I can vouch for that. And I found something.
Yeah, your camp at Vival was Summertown.
This is correct. So, and for all the
thank you for taking every little last coconut there possibly was on that.
There was
island.
Nothing there to begin with, so I can imagine how little you.
I believe
got.
You.
Yeah. Next question: Who was season one? Who from season one still has a Velcro wallet?
Oh, good question. Sam Webb has the Velcro wallet.
Very good. A man after my heart. Who did the least around camp? And by least, I mean even less than you.
Oh, wow. Peter.
Okay, interesting. Hair power rankings. Your man bun, Henry's man bun, Sideshow Bob's mane, or Tarzan's mane? Give me the power rankings, 1 to 4.
Yeah, Ben, 1. Tarzan, beard, 2. Henry's man bun, 3. My man bun, 4.
Oh, okay. Not bad, not bad. Who else would have been, would we be surprised at being the healthier version of you? So who was very similar to you?
He was very similar to me. I'm going to say Luke. Okay. Luke's a crack up.
Okay, yeah. Good.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm a crack up. I feel like on a Sunga, like Luke was my opposite. We both went out there, you know, trying to play that.
I see that. Game, yeah. I see that.
Yeah.
Who did you want to sit at the end with?
Ben.
Okay. Whose snacks did it pain you the most that you had to swap Maltesers with?
Odette's almonds.
What?
You get one choice of a treat out there, and you pick almonds. Odette, seriously, I know that you are an immaculate human being, but please, just like hook into some chocolate. That's all I ask.
Oh, God. What barnyard animal best resembled the grunts that Lockie would come out with?
Oh.
I couldn't stand with it. Okay.
If you've ever been to the zoo, you know that the baboons are the loudest and most annoying. You're like, oh, can they just shut up? Lockie, during any challenge where he required masculinity, would give off some bamboo.
Baboon. Very good. On a scale of 1 to 10, how fun was it beating Lockie?
10.
Excellent. And on the night of your vote off, last question, who did you want to go on and win?
Luke and Jarrett.
Ooh, very good. Very good. AK, this was an epic hour-long exit interview, and I think that we may have broken a RHAP record for longest exit interview with a player in the game. We spoke for an hour and we covered so much stuff. Thank you. Thank you.
You're more than welcome, and I didn't even make the merge.
Yeah, exactly. There are people who made the merge last year who I think we could have spoken for 15 minutes.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you for your time. Appreciate what you're doing, and good luck with it all. I know it's new for you, but yeah, you're doing a great job, man.
Thank you so much, AK. Where can people find you online?
Yeah, on Instagram, it's aaron.knight.ak. You can find me on my business website is www.akevents.com.au. And my DJ business page on Facebook is just DJAK.
Very good. Are you a Twitter? Are you a bit of a tweeter?
I'm new to Twitter. I've got an account. And I'll just say quickly, I apologize to anyone who's reached out to me on Twitter. It confuses the living shit out of me. And I think I'm just going to use it to read all the hate comments rather than get back to people. So if you want to hit me up on Insta, and I'll try my best to get back to you. And can I just say, Nick, quickly, thank you to everyone who has sent me a message this week. I've had so much love, absolute zero hate with all my private messages. I appreciate it so much. I mean, I went out there as a huge fan. I wanted to play big. Unfortunately, I didn't get like the greatest edit character wise, but no, much love to you all.
Well, okay, that brings us to the end. Thank you so much. Stay in touch, and we will be watching, and hopefully one day in the future we can get you on again because you had great insights. Thank you so much, AK.
Thanks, Nick. Talk to you soon, mate.
Bye. All right, everyone. There was my chat with AK. Ton of good stuff in there. I think there's a lot that I learned as well about what it means to play Survivor. So I hope you enjoyed that. AK's a lot of fun, and you can tell that he definitely has no regrets. And you know, he may have gone out early, but one of the things you want when you come back from the island is to say, do you know what, I put it all out on the line and I really have no regrets. And I think that that's a really good place to be. Let's transition now to my chat with Ben. And Ben had a lot of cool insights into the game as well. So let's not forget about that. And I think Ben is someone who, yeah, had a lot to offer the show. We just didn't get to see it all. So he addresses that as well. So I hope you enjoy my chat with Ben. All right, everyone, on the line, we have this year's youngest contestant. It's Sideshow Bob himself, someone who I'm, again, I loved watching on the show and wish we got to see more of, and it is Ben. Ben, welcome.
Thanks, Nick. Great to be here, man.
Thank you so much for coming and chatting. There are plenty of people who want to hear more about your game, and I just want to know how you're feeling at this point. It's all done and dusted. Process it for me.
Well, right now, I'm feeling pretty good. Obviously, it's been a long day. This is my final interview. You know, I did about 20 interviews on the trot, radio interviews, podcasts, all that. This one's kind of a bit different because there's not quite so much of a rush to get this one done because it's less of a tight schedule, but, you know.
Excellent. Well, there's plenty of things we want to ask, but first of all, Ben, you know, we heard that you're a super fan. There's plenty of super fans listening. Is this true?
Yeah, I am.
Tell us a little bit about your history with Survivor.
All right, so I watched it very early on as a kid. I'll be honest, I haven't watched like every season, but like I've researched all the seasons. I was a fan of Survivor as a kid. I'll admit I went off it a bit, but then I got back to it, and then it was like hooked from then on. So I've watched probably the last 12 seasons. Straight through.
Who do you think out there was the biggest super fan, like the one who probably had the most Rolodex of knowledge about the show?
To be honest, this season there's quite a lot. Tessa could rival me in trivia, I reckon. She was good. AJ, obviously, maybe not so much on the trivia side of things, but he obviously knew the game very well. Big fan of reality TV in general as well. Other big fans.
It's good to hear that there are so many more fans out there than last year. That's good to know.
I'm led to believe Adam is a super duper fan.
Yes, he said that.
You know, I wouldn't have a clue what he's like with trivia.
Sure,
but I'll throw his name out there just because I'm probably never going to mention him at any point in any other interview.
Well, one of the things that came up was obviously about your age, and you know, in Survivor recently, they've been experimenting in American Survivor with having young contestants. So we recently had Will Wall and Julia Sokolowski. Talk about, like, can you just tell me a little bit about your age and how you think that was a hindrance or maybe a help, either getting on the show or out there?
I don't really think my age necessarily helped me because I think age more or less is arbitrary in the process of getting on. I mean, of course, they've got to fill all, they've all got to fill the diversity quota, you know, young people, old people, all that. They've got to have a good age range. But I think what got me on was, like, you know, Sarah's only 2 years younger than me, but she's, you know, she's had a large worldly experience, you know, she's well traveled and all that. And what I did to get on the show, I played a bit of reverse psychology with the producers. I said, look, I've literally got no life experience, no credentials. I could either be this heroic underdog or a complete absolute bust. Either way, it's going to be entertaining if you put me on. I'm a fan of the show, first and foremost, and, you know, I really know the game pretty well, but I am in no way prepared at all whatsoever. Nothing's ever prepared me for anything like this. So we'll see how we go.
I think that's a good angle. That's something that everyone goes on saying they've got all these skills that are going to help them, and you get out there and you realize that they don't. So that's interesting. All right. Well, if you could take us back to that tribal council, how did it feel with Michelle? She came at you quite hard, and I'm not sure if we even saw all of her. Tell me back to that moment. How did you feel in that point?
Well, it was tough to cop. I mean, I'm a pretty resilient person. I can, you know, when someone insults me, I tend not to get too antsy about it. Like, I can just take it on the chin. It's like a doormat. Like, eventually, if you keep treading on me, I'm going to wear out. And that's kind of what happened. And she wasn't the only one, you know, throwing the shade my way. Tessa and Annalise also had their two cents worth as well. So, and it was all along the same sort of topic, you know, same line of attack, really. And it was that, it was hard to cop, not going to lie. Part of me, when I left, was kind of relieved As much as I hate to say it, I would have hated having to go back to camp.
As someone who got chewed out at tribal council and then had to go back to camp that night, it's not fun.
I feel.
Could you hear the whispering that was going on? Like, so we, you know, we see that Annalise is whispering to Lockie, and if so, did you try and do anything to counteract that?
Oh, I mean, I was on the other side of it, so I mean, it was hard to really counteract anything. But like, look, I knew the target was well and before I knew that before tribal council, the target was well and truly amplified. I mean, I couldn't really make sense of what they were saying at tribal. So, what they were whispering, sorry, at tribal. So I was just going to try and answer. You know, Michelle would make points, and my basic plan of attack was just to debunk any of her points. I did debunk a few of them. A couple of which wasn't shown. Like she went on about, you know, she actually, one line of attack she used was the fact that I flipped the very first vote. I flipped, and she tried to use that against me. And I said, well, I've flipped to avoid everyone to go in a rock, and you know, to ensure that, you know, none of the other 10 contestants, yourself included, didn't go home. So
interesting.
That was my. Yeah, so
that's good. I like that.
I didn't do a very good job that night, to say the least.
Do you think that it was decided at tribal council? Like, do you think that they changed their vote at tribal council?
No. Ziggy already knew about me revealing it. So
okay. Yeah. So it seems like they tried a split vote. Is that what they were going for? If Henry, Lockie, Annalise, if they all knew where the idols were, why did they try a split vote?
Well, everyone knew that I'd spent a lot of time when I was at Asunga. I'd spent a lot of time looking for an idol, arguably more than anyone else did. So there was always some degree of suspicion that I may have one. Even though I never did, obviously.
Yep.
So I think that was just to, the split vote was just to, obviously, you know, just in case if I did, obviously Michelle would go. Michelle would be the sacrificial lamb for that. Yep. That seemed to be Tessa and Lockie's logic to that. Because obviously, Tessa and Lockie both wanted me gone, but they also knew that everyone wanted me gone at that point. So they could afford to sort of split their vote that way.
Why was Tessa so gung-ho on you going home as well?
Tessa, all right, so this was before, she kind of wanted me gone before I'd even put my foot in my mouth. I've spoken to Tessa very recently, and I love Tessa to death out there. I know we got along great on a personal level, but it was the strategic level. She didn't trust me. She said, she, in her own words, she couldn't get a good read on me. She viewed me, and she wasn't the only person, that's for sure, as being quite wishy-washy and hard to get a proper read on. And she viewed Michelle as being more predictable going forward and a safer bet.
Right.
That's her words, not mine, sort of thing.
So one of the things that came up was that, you know, you say you're not that eloquent, that you can't really kind of like argue your way. And I don't think you're that bad as you think you are, but what is it about the game that made you stumble like that? Is because I feel, you know, you have to be quite eloquent to get on the show. What is it out there? Was there a disconnect, or is that what happens in everyday life?
I think there was a disconnect. Obviously, I mentioned this in my post-game confessional. I don't deal well with confrontation, so like, you know, when my tendency, when the bullets are flying my way, I just have a tendency to just clam up, because I'm not a confrontational person by nature. So yeah. when it happens to me, I have a very tough time coping with it. And Michelle was not holding back. She was just I'll admit I kind of crumbled. I tried to put on a brave face and push through it, but you know, when that happens, I just can't register anything. It's just, I go blank.
So what made you tell Michelle then? Like, what made you tell her about the hidden advantage clue? Like, did you think that you could trust her?
Okay. So I was under the impression that, okay, I was, because when I'd first swapped to Summertown, Lockie and Henry were the ones being gunned for. Now, I believed wrongfully, that after the next swap, that Lockie was still on the chopping block. And obviously I knew Michelle was too. And I actually wanted to work with Michelle initially. So my pitch was to her, and I jumped the gun on this. My pitch was to her was to, I approached her about, you know, forming a pact and all that. And I revealed that information as sort of a, you know, a nugget, I guess you could say, to get her to trust me. Going forward.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Because I still thought that Lockie was on the people were still going for him, evidently not. I knew I wasn't in a particularly good position, but I saw it as a sort of, I guess you could say, a way to move forward. And then when I realized that, you know, when I, you know, read the dynamic later and Lockie's no longer on the chopping block, it's me, in fact.
Yeah.
And I know full well that I've revealed critical information about Ziggy to Michelle. I'm like, wow, this could get ugly. I knew that, I did know there were people like Jared and Henry and all that that did want to keep me around. So one of the things that I tried to do, now, I had a reasonable understanding of the Summertown dynamics, you know, earlier on and what happened, but I didn't have a full grasp of what happened because obviously it was very complicated, arguably a lot more complicated than that of the Sunga. The one thing I tried to do was I tried to sway Annalise to my side. Basically, I said, look, I can't remember the whole details of what I said to her, but I said to her, look, you and I are in a similar position at this point in the game. Now, these people have gone for you previously, and obviously I don't want that to happen to you again because I'm not in a particularly great position myself, and I think it's in our best interest if we work together.
Sure.
Because she was close with Sarah at Sunga, and so was I, believe it or not. They don't show that, but I was in good with Sarah over there before I left. So, and Sarah wanted to work, you know, Sarah was still willing to work with me at that point. If we were ever to merge.
So you mentioned Annalise. I really love the scene where you guys are sitting there on the beach, and you walk over and you sit down and pretty much deep throat like a shell of rice. And Annalise and Lockie are talking about, you know, switching it up right in front of you. Did you know what they were talking about, or was that a complete surprise to you when you watched it back?
To be honest, I didn't. No, I didn't know what they were talking about. I didn't know. But I presume they were having a strategic discussion, but yeah. I wasn't fully in tune with what the actual content of it was. But I guess you could say I made an educated guess.
Yeah.
Because I knew my name was getting thrown around.
Yeah.
Then I said, then he said, Lockie, like, are you Summertown strong? And I'm like, Yeah, I am.
I think one of the things that people need to understand is that it gets really tricky out there thinking on your feet so quickly. And, you know, I cut you a lot of slack because when you're in those high pressure situations, the one wrong thing can really come back to you. I want a few quick questions. If Summertown had gone to tribal council before Annalise and Michelle came over, what would have happened and who would you have voted for?
Well, it would have been most likely a split between Henry and Lockie. And whether or not Henry would have played his idol. I mean, I know it said in the confessional that I was willing to get rid of Henry, which I was, if that was what their plan was. But ideally, I wanted to get rid of Lockie more because I had a connection with Henry. And I said to him, look, I'm in with these guys. I'm going to try and work for you so you can get in too. I was willing to, you know, play a bit of double agent.
Yeah.
But obviously, we never went to tribal. And then we swapped. So there's no need for that.
One of the things I loved about your game, Ben, was when you volunteered to leave a Sunga. Can you just talk us quickly through that rationale? Because I think that was the right move.
Yeah, okay. So obviously I wasn't in a particularly powerful position over at a Sunga. I had some bonds, but I wasn't yet. I was willing to take a chance to enhance my game by going somewhere else. Because I believe that, you know, you've got to have friends from both parties. Like a hand in as many pies as you can when you hit the merge. I wanted to hit the merge with a head start. Now, obviously, it's kind of laughable because I never even made it to the merge, so I'm completely undateable in that sense. But, but you know, yeah, there's the super fan. guilty.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I think you got to take those risks, and I think it was the right risk to make. So, you know, you either die a slow death at one tribe or risk it and, you know, go out in the blaze of glory at another. So good on you. Yeah, good on you. One big question before we get to a few rapid fires. You know, you've joked on social media about, you know, getting the purple edit. What's something about your edit that really, you've covered a few things, but something that you really were hoping that could be seen or something that you wanted to let the fans know that you were working on? You said you were searching for an idol. Was there anything else?
Yeah, I was searching for an idol. One thing, I obviously got no confessional in regards to the Joan boat, because I obviously switched my boat.
Yeah,
that to avoid going to pots. I said to there wasn't a great deal of strategy going on at Asunga during our winning streak period because it was basically just it was Samantha all the way basically for the most part, and it was actually a very long winded process because it was a long time coming, and it was a very predictable thing. You know, it was so straightforward that boat. So there wasn't a great deal of strategy happening. But you know, one of the things, like with the Mark boat, me and Sarah were very close at that point. We were having in-depth discussion about, because Luke had approached both of us trying to sway us to target the power couple, which I denied existed, but evidently I was wrong with that. So me and Sarah, and you know, we had an in-depth discussion about that and said, look, this is brilliant for us. You know, the big boys are targeting each other, and you know, we don't have to do anything. You know, we just got to pick a side. We're in the middle. I mean, this is perfect. You know, we get to eliminate a big threat, and you know, and not, you know, and have easiest decision. So
the Will Wall pendulum strategy. You were going to try and bounce around in the middle. It's a good place to be. It's a good place to be, Benny. I've got a few rapid fire questions. If you're interested, I've got just a couple here that I think will be a nice way to end out the interview. So I'm going to ask them to you, and I want you to just tell me like first answer that comes to your head. Super short. You can be like a word or a phrase. You ready to go?
Okay.
That's excellent. All right, ready? Okay, have you ever been called Sideshow Bob before the show, or is this a new thing?
Yes, lots of times.
Lots of times? Okay. Who did you want to go to the end with?
Probably Jared, I guess. I wasn't really thinking end too much at that point because it was too early to be thinking about it.
Exactly. Right? Yes. How did you feel about Tara's shit-eating grin as she came into the challenge that day?
I loved it.
You loved
I didn't really like all the smack talk that AK was on the receiving end back when he left.
Yeah.
It was a bit much, but my theory was I contributed as well just to make it look like I was adapting and fitting in.
Yes. Yes.
Even though I didn't, because I had nothing wrong. I had nothing against the guy. I wasn't threatened by him or anything. I mean, he was obviously a very great player, I'm not trying to say it, but I wasn't like, you know, intimidated by AK.
Is it true that you're not really a burger flipper or a yoga instructor, but in fact a AFL draft prospect with that mean drop punt?
I did play footy as a kid, so yeah. But I was always not the best footballer, but I was always a reasonable set shot. But yeah, rubbish around the ground. There were no documented cases of leather poisoning with me, man.
I think you did great at it. Did you or did you not chew grass, as Henry claims?
I think I did chew grass at one point. I mean, there's not much else to eat out. But,
Who would you rather be your mother figure, Jackie or Odette?
Is there a third option?
I think that's your answer.
I don't know if I want to answer that one. I honestly like them. I do like them both, but yeah, they
not for you, not your cup of tea.
They scared me more than anyone, to be honest.
more so than
Mark and Michelle at Final Tribal.
Right. Well, there you go. Whose burger would you spit in if they came into your burger flipping establishment?
probably, yeah, I don't know. I guess probably Henry, actually. Because he talked a lot of smack behind my back. So okay. I'll just give him I'll spit in his Zen hamburger.
Okay, good. There we go. And of the people left, who at the point where you exited the game did you want to win?
Sarah.
Excellent.
Fellow Perthian. Lovely, lovely girl, and has what it takes to win. Whether or not she's in position at this point to win, I'm not exactly sure, but
she's good. She's good. We've spoken a lot on the podcast about the, you know, the way she talks to people, and I hear you on that one, Ben.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming and chatting to us today. We spoke for a little longer than we're allowed, but I think there's some good stuff in there, some good nuggets of information. And I got to say, I loved you reaching for your bag when they asked for the idol, and you know, soaking in the snuffing moment. That I get it, mate. I get it.
Yes, thank you.
All right, Ben. Well, please stay in touch and take care, and we'll speak to you soon.
No dramas, mate. Take care.
Thanks, Benny. All right, everyone, that was my chat with Ben. Great stuff from Ben there. I hope you enjoyed that super, super, super sized version of the exit interviews, and I look forward to hearing what you guys had to say. And be sure to check out the podcast with Connor coming up in the next day or so. All right, everyone, make sure you let me know what you thought on Twitter. Hit me up on @NickIdanza and on Instagram as well. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say. Thanks, everybody, and I will see you soon.